From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't spend a lot of time on this broadcast talking about personal matters, but I do want to say at the start of the show, or Le Show, as we call it here at Le Show, a shout out to my godson, who just yesterday graduated from the University of Texas. Yes, they have a university in Texas. Big old university in Texas. Congratulations, Spencer. Ladies and gentlemen, what the frack? Dateline Williston, North Dakota, an oil well near the town of Tioga, you know, it's just near Williston, continued to leak oil, gas, and fracking fluid this week, days after authorities learned about the problem, according to a local official. Emergency coordinator Mike Halsey said he was notified of the spill in the western North Dakota's oil patch a few days earlier. The leak hadn't stopped since. The incident occurred at, and here's one reason why I'm sharing this story with you. The incident, according to the Department of Mineral Resources of the state of North Dakota, occurred at the Ron Burgundy 32314H well. That's right. They named a well after a Will Ferrell character. And here's what they got for it. A leak around 8 miles northwest of Tioga. You know where that is. The well is owned by Denver-based Emerald Oil. Halsey, the emergency coordinator, said the site's wellhead, apparently not too well, failed during hydraulic fracturing. Allison Ritter, spokeswoman for the Department of Mineral Resources, said the well is protected by a confidentiality agreement. That's right. Ron Burgundy, 32314H, is a confidential fracking well. What does that mean? She said her office could disclose only the name of the well, Ron Burgundy, 314H. 3248, its general location, its owner, and that a spill had occurred. Information about confidential wells is withheld from the public for up to 6 months until the symptoms become... No. Halsey said a reading taken 10 feet from the wellhead showed hydrogen sulfide levels at 20 parts per million. At 100 parts per million, it can be life-threatening. But it's only 20. And I'll stop talking like this. Two farms located more than a quarter mile from the site of the incident have been notified of the spill and about the hydrogen sulfide. A perimeter has been set up, and the roads near the site have been closed down. The spill had so far been contained with berms, and that excess liquid is being trucked out of the area to disposal sites. Love to be driving those trucks. What are we carrying here, boss? Can't tell you. Yeah, I know, but what's the content? Can't tell you. Confidential well. Halsey, the emergency manager, said he didn't have any immediate information about the size of the spill. Oh, I do, but... Halliburton subsidiary Boots and Coots, a well control company, has been called to the well to try to stop the flow. Yeah, when in doubt, call Boots and Coots. And we have been talking about, for every once in a while, about the mysterious story of the honeybees. Last week came a report that the die-off of honeybees this past winter was only 23% compared to 30% the couple of years before, and that was touted as kind of good news. Well, here comes Yale Environment 360, quoting a new report from the Department of Agriculture, saying honeybees in the U.S. are dying at a rate too high to ensure their long-term survival. Over the past winter, the 23% versus the 30%, but the cumulative impact on honeybee populations over the past 8 years poses a major threat to their long-term survival, as well as to the country's agricultural productivity, according to the USDA. So let's all learn to eat sand, shall we? Roughly one quarter of U.S. crops depend on honeybees for pollination. Yearly fluctuations in the rate of losses like these only demonstrate how complicated the whole issue of honeybee health has become, said a USDA researcher, citing factors such as viruses, pathogens, and pesticides. One class of pesticides, in particular neonicotinoids, has been implicated in honeybee deaths. The European Union banned three widely used neonicotinoids last year. But that's Europe. We're still using them here. You know why? Because we're not Europe. Hello, welcome to the show.
Okay.
and we never will be Europe.
Ride your pony and take a letter to someone waiting to hear from. Ride your pony and take my letter, you know I'm waiting to get some news from up the street. She's people I'd like to meet. News from up the street. She's people I'd like to meet. One in particular must get my letter so she'll know that I live here. If only you'd deliver it, the letter I write. If only you'd deliver it, the letter I write. If only you'd deliver it, the letter I deliver it, the letter I deliver it, the letter. Got to hear from, I wrote her a letter, and when she gets it, I know she'll answer it. I'll be feeling much better, and when she gets it, I know she'll answer it. That's the way that I wrote it. So ride your pony and take my letter here. I'll be looking and hoping for news from. From up the street, she's people I'd like to meet. She's people I would like to meet. If only you.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, right by, just spitting distance from Lake Pontchartrain, but they don't need the spit. They got plenty where that came from. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. A couple of items from the trade magazine of public broadcasting, Current. Study finds most listeners don't mind NPR's embedded underwriting credits is first, and I'll read it for you. Please give, so I'll read. No, I'll read anyway. A committee of NPR's board voted this week to maintain embedded underwriting as its current level on network programs, despite concerns among station executives that the practice could harm listeners' perceptions. What's embedded underwriting? These credits appear within segments of NPR's news magazines rather than in the longer blocks of credits that punctuate the shows. That's what they do. They punctuate them. Just punctuation. Don't worry about it. The credits, these embedded credits, give sponsors dedicated placement alongside particular series and areas of coverage, such as business, health, and technology. NPR ramped up efforts to sell embedded underwriting 3 years ago, and station leaders and programmers responded with worries that the credits were disrupting the flow of programs and giving listeners the idea that sponsors are influencing content. Late last year, NPR agreed to limit the number of adjacent spots to 11 per week and to study listeners' reaction to the credits. There are two things we needed to take care of: the clutter and the audience's perception of what we're doing, the general manager of St. Louis Public Radio told Current. In the hearts and minds of folks at NPR, there's a big firewall, but what does the audience think? Unquote. The new study commissioned by NPR found that most listeners surveyed were unfazed by the credits. The research asked listeners to react to a credit airing alongside an NPR story about a subject in the sponsor's line of business. 32% of the listeners reacted negatively. 33% were positive. 35% were neutral. Among panelists who said they didn't regularly listen to NPR, 13% responded negatively, 47% neutrally, and 40% positively. So they're more positive when they don't listen to NPR. The Resource Development Committee of NPR's board, which got these results, also reviewed the internal process that NPR set up to manage the placements. Staffers from NPR's development, editorial, and sponsorship departments meet weekly to discuss adjacency opportunities. The team maintains a blacklist of sponsors that should not be approached due to potential conflicts. Editorial staffers have authority to drop any credits already sold if they have concerns about conflicts. "We drop adjacencies all the time that feel awkward," said NPR Senior VP for News. NPR hasn't revealed how much revenue it earns from embedded underwriting, but $6 million in sponsorship sales last September alone positioned the network to close the fiscal year with record-setting fundraising. Those results prompted then-NPR CEO Gary Nell, not the guy who's taken over now, who worked under the DJ name Lee Masters. No, this is Gary Nell, who proclaimed NPR had embraced a, quote, revenue culture, unquote. Some station executives say the network's underwriting practices have already gone too far. "I think they're playing loose and dangerous with this," said Ellen Rocco from North Country Public Radio in New York State. "We're having more and more of these special sponsorships, and over time the perception is these stories are being bought and sold by the underwriters." NPR is focusing too much on selling credits and not enough on what listeners might think, Rocco said. "It's a real concern," she adds, "when we start getting soft about how we approach these things. It seems like a philosophical change in where NPR is going," said the program director of Seattle's KUOW. "It's a slippery slope," unquote. He also objected to the use of embedded credits in the A segments of news magazines. "The A segment is supposed to be sacrosanct," he said. "Imagine above the fold on the front page of a major newspaper you have an ad pegged to a story there. That's what they're doing." "Embedded underwriting within A segments is rare," said Emma Carrasco, NPR's chief marketing officer, through a spokesperson. That's right. Even the chief marketing officer has a spokesperson. But wait. There's more. Also from Current, recast formula for public TV's Nature depicts animal wives in human terms. Yeah. Reading that too. I'm on a roll. No, actually, I'm on a chair. Rolled away. A stalwart PBS series is moving in a new direction with fascinating characters and emotional relationships that tug at viewers' heartstrings. If you're thinking masterpiece or mystery, think again. This is Nature. No longer home to informative but bland films about jungle jaguars or snakes of the Serengeti, today's Nature is about pets with prosthetic limbs or wild animals engaging in human-like behavior, such as birds checking out real estate, animals of different species developing friendships, and mating pairs falling in love. The new take on natural history films has helped Nature through its recent switch from its longtime Sunday night preach to Wednesday nights. The show maintained its ratings during the transition. Its focus on character-driven nature stories, which has proven popular with viewers, also has helped to distinguish its programming from that of cable channels. Fred Kaufman, the executive producer who has helped to steer Nature through these changes, describes the shift in the way that natural history filmmakers approach their subjects. Quote, "Our films have become more character-driven and, frankly, more emotional," Kaufman says. Still quoting, "You're more likely to laugh or cry than to be scared by a predatory animal in a herd or in a hunt. That's what we found our audience really loves." Maybe this new approach should have been obvious, Kaufman says. PBS is not about sex and violence anyway. This is a quote still. "That's not what the audience comes in to see. It's always about the richness of story and characters and a bit of information and content. That's the niche we've found." Unquote. A 2010 film about hummingbirds led the way. Nature's Magic Air used high-speed, high-definition cinematography to capture the lives of hummingbirds and portray them with emotional resonance. It was extraordinarily popular, Kaufman said, so much so that many public television stations aired it as a pledge special. Well, no higher praise. Move over, John Tesh. To viewers, these charming hummingbirds were charismatic little jewels, Kaufman said. It was a case where something was very popular for us, and we moved ahead and did something similar, unquote. Yeah, do more of that. Ducks were the next species to get the emotional treatment. They seem to be the clumsiest animals, Kaufman says. They can't get off the water. They need a sort of airport runway to get any lift. They waddle. How do they survive? He asks. In his quote. Meanwhile, other nature films looked for parallels between animals and humans. One show, Animal House, focused on the architecture of animal homes. A new series now in production, Animal House Hunters, plays off a popular series on HDTV. "We thought there was more to it than we did in Animal House," Kaufman said. "We thought this was a bigger topic to mine. So we're doing 3 hours next April." Unquote. Kaufman. Now we get to the gist of it, ladies and gentlemen. Going back to the reading, Kaufman isn't a big animal lover and doesn't have a pet. He began his television career looking to become a sports producer. He joined Nature as a production assistant 30 years ago and worked his way up to executive producer. He looks for ideas for Nature films by perusing YouTube and bookstore aisles. Animal Odd Couples, a documentary of a couple of years ago that looked at how animals interact outside of their natural habitats, was inspired by viral web videos of unlikely animal friendships. Wait till he discovers bicycling cats. Quote, "For the most part, it's happening in sanctuaries and zoos," he said, referring to the relationships that develop between animals of different species, such as the bird and turtle depicted in the documentary. Quote, "It doesn't take place in the wild. It all happens in a controlled situation. which changes the behavior of these animals, but clearly that hit a nerve with people, unquote. Among the 12 Emmys awarded to nature is one for My Life as a Turkey, about a man who spent 2 years living among gobblers. We did a show called Love in the Animal Kingdom, which we'd never have done 10 years ago, Kaufman said. I struggled with whether or not we could even call it Love in the Animal Kingdom because it's such an anthropomorphic idea. Do animals love? Can they fall in love? I think species can, but a lot of what we had considered to be anthropomorphic thinking, we're now realizing that's the new trend. Public television, ladies and gentlemen. Following the trend. Oh, there are only two words that occurred. Please give. When I read the trades for you, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, we don't have the Olympic theme this week. John Williams is on a well-deserved vacation. So we do have, however, news of the Olympic movement. We'll try very hard to make it just as exciting as it would have been had there been a musical accompaniment, but, you know, I only have this one voice. Oh, no, I don't. Deadline Moscow, the Russian capital. Moscow, ladies and gentlemen, is being considered as a possible replacement host for the 2016 Summer Olympic Games amid those doubts that facilities in Rio will be completed on time. This is according to a source in the International Olympic Committee telling a Russian sports website. The source added that Moscow's ability to afford the games was still a question. Hey, they blew $50 billion on the Winter Olympics. And that the city could face a few difficulties in preparing certain sports facilities, such as in sailing, equestrian events, and cycling. You know, last week, the London Evening Standard reported the IOC was nosing around London to see if London could take over. The IOC said there is not a shred of truth in that report. Meanwhile, this IOC source told the Russian website it is highly likely that London venues could be used for the 2016 Games, adding this decision would be taken after the World Cup to be held between June 12th and July 13th in Brazil. Yes, they're having the World Cup and the Olympics in the same country. The transfer to the Olympics to London is possible. I think the procedure will be like this. The IOC will wait for the results of the World Cup and how they will hold it and will take a decision after if no progress is made, quoting the source. With 2 years to go before the Games, Rio has come under severe scrutiny for chronic delays. London did host the Olympic Games in an emergency in 1908, replacing Rome after a disastrous eruption of Mount Vesuvius. Wow. Didn't know that. Moscow. Hey, L.A., get into it. You still got everything. And you can afford it. Don Sterling alone could. Korea's largest environmental group. Speaking of Don Sterling, congratulations to CP3 for a wonderful playoff series. Now, more Olympic news. Korea's largest environmental group urged the organizing committee for the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang to scrap their plan to build a ski slope on Mount Gariwang. In 2012, the organizing committee designated the mountain, which is 5,120 feet high, as the venue for the downhill. Despite opposition from environmentalists, the construction of a ski slope will begin early next month, according to the government. The activists insist there is no need to build a new slope because there are alternative places that can be used for the ski competition. The organizing committee cites International Ski Federation rules as why it had to choose Mount Gariwang. Under the rules, a ski slope should be located at least 2,600 feet above sea level. However, a clause also states that a ski slope located 2,560 feet above can be used under exceptional circumstances, according to the activists. This makes it unnecessary to build a new ski resort on Mount Gariwang. An existing one can be used, said the Secretary General of Green Korea, which said it represents a coalition of dozens of environmental groups that oppose the construction. An official from the province said, "We will soon submit a plan to minimize the environmental damage from the construction. We will then be able to start construction in early June." The controversy dates back to 2011 when Pyeongchang was chosen as the venue. Environmental activists have voiced opposition, saying cutting down trees on the mountains for a week-long ski event was a dangerous trade-off. Mount Gariwang's ecological value has been recognized nationally. The Korea Forest Service listed the mountain as a site for the protection of flora, genes, and forest ecosystems. Well, that's like painting a target on its back. It is believed to be a huge habitat for Wangsashur trees, a type of aspen unique to Korea. However, the service removed its name from the list last year, the Forest Service, so therefore approving resort construction. It just removed the name from the list. That's all they did. Reflecting the environmental concerns, the Environment Ministry last year ordered the organizing committee to submit a recovery plan for after the Games and engage representatives of environmental groups in the process. Those groups have turned down the request to cooperate as a protest. Making friends wherever they go. The Olympics, it's a movement, ladies and gentlemen, and we all need one. Every day.
We're still in Wisconsin, as far as I know. Today was Green Bay, and tomorrow Chicago. Wish I was lying, but there isn't much to report. My phone is dying, so I've got to keep it short. I just wanted to say, hey, I've been writing you a road song. It's a cliche, but hey, that doesn't make it so wrong. And in between the stops at the Cracker Barrel and 40 movies with Will Ferrell, I need some way to occupy my time. So I'm writing you a road song. I sure hope you don't mind. You a light blue t-shirt last night from some band I couldn't stand, but their logo's alright. Some kid threw a bottle on stage, he had an arm like a pro. I know it's getting late, I guess I should let you go. Did I happen to say, hey, I've been writing you a road song, don't run away, 'cause hey, I promise it won't be too long. I know it's not what you call necessary, and I know that I'm no Steve Perry, but even if you roll your eyes and groan, we're still writing song that you can call your own.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend, the Atom.
Clean, safe.
Addie the Atom, here with me in New Orleans.
Well, I'm easy to pack.
You are. You're the maybe the easiest thing to pack. And that was interesting how that just started up. They have minds of their own, don't they?
Everybody does.
Have you ever had your walls frozen?
I have not. I have no walls.
Oh, all right. That would explain it. Plans to start construction in June of the frozen underground soil walls at the crippled Fuk nuclear plant are now askew.
What's askew?
It's askew, I say, after concerns were raised by the nation's nuclear watchdog body. The Nuclear Regulation Authority said plant operator TEPCO has yet to submit documents demonstrating the safety and efficacy of the project, which happens to be unprecedented in scale. Announced in May 2013, the frozen walls are intended to stem the flow of groundwater into the nuclear complex.
Why don't they just get ice cubes?
I don't. Once the project is started, it will be difficult to turn back, said Toyoshi Fuketa, an NRA commissioner who is screening the project planned by TEPCO and the central government. We have to thoroughly examine every aspect of this project because it is such a drastic measure, unquote. TEPCO has been grappling with ways to staunch the daily flow of 400 tons of groundwater into the plant complex. The groundwater mixes with melted nuclear fuel debris and has significantly raised the volume of contaminated water that TEPCO has to deal with, in addition to tons of highly radioactive water used to cool the reactors.
It's just water.
The technique to build the walls of frozen soil is similar to a method used in the construction of tunnels, stretching 1,500 meters.
I don't know either.
The frozen walls are expected to cut the inflow of groundwater to 130 tons from the current 400 tons. So they're doing all this to cut the flow a little more than in half.
Not nothing.
TEPCO and the government plan to begin the actual freezing of soil in March of next year with the expectation the walls could last for 7 years.
How much electricity does it take to keep the walls frozen? Well, we've got a nuclear plant there. We can make some.
The government has provided $313 million in funding for the project in a test run for building the frozen walls that was observed at the plant this week. The groundwater level outside the site was close to the surface of the ground, but no water was observed in holes inside the walls. An official with the firm in charge of the construction said the trial was successful in blocking groundwater. We cleared a first hurdle, he said. But the trial involved walls only 10 meters square, a fraction of the actual size of the massive walls that are due to be constructed. Experts have warned...
Well, experts always warn. That's why they're experts.
They have warned that if something goes wrong with the walls, it could critically affect work to handle the contaminated water and decommissioning operations. TEPCO submitted a three-page document for approval by the Regulatory Commission, but Fuketa pointed out at a review meeting the document fell far short of providing the necessary safety assurances to pass screening. The NRA told the utility to provide answers to 24 items the watchdog is concerned about, such as the possibility of land sinking, leaks of contaminated water, and countermeasures in the event the frozen soil thaws.
Bring ice cubes.
The NRA is demanding that TEPCO explain how the construction of the walls of frozen soil will be able to cut the volume of contaminated water.
I'll have my walls frozen if that's what it takes.
You have no walls. It's no surprise that radiation is bad for animals, but how much is too much? Researchers in Japan decided to put this question to the test for the pale grass blue butterfly, a species commonly found around the remains of the Fuke plant, and they discovered even the smallest amount of radiation turns out to be too much.
Too much is not enough.
There you go. See? Goes right back at you. Researchers, rather than study butterflies in the environment, they perform meticulous lab experiments on specimens connected in Okinawa far from any radioactive contamination. They collected plant material from around Fuke and fed it to pale grass blue butterfly caterpillars. When the caterpillars turned into butterflies...
They do that?
They suffered from mutations and were more likely to die early than ones that had not eaten radioactive plants. This finding applied even to those butterflies that had only eaten a small amount of artificial cesium as caterpillars. We conclude that the risk of injecting a polluted diet is realistic, at least for this butterfly, and likely for certain other organisms living in the polluted area, the team concludes in a report from Smithsonian.com.
Yeah, but who wants to live in an institution?
Japan's nuclear disaster at Fuke had less of an impact on wildlife and human health than expected. See, goes the other way now. According to a recently finalized UN report, the Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation cast a broad net looking at potential health effects in people living in the area. UN researchers looked for iodine-131 and cesium-137 in fish caught off the northeast coast of Japan. They found nearly all types actually had lower than the acceptable levels of these radionuclides. The UN also looked at the measured incidences of thyroid cancer. Iodine-131 can increase the risk of this, Early reports conducted after the disaster said there was an increase of precancerous thyroid lesions in people living nearby. However, the UN reports that the increase in the number of nodules found was due to increased screening, and there was no difference between the population in 2006 and the population that was exposed to the radiation.
I rest my case.
Your case is always resting. Dateline Scriba, New York, an aging cooling system at the Fitzpatrick nuclear plant in Oswego County is springing leaks so often that plant operators had to reduce power 11 times during the first 3 months of 2014 so that workers could plug the leaks. Its condenser, which circulates Lake Ontario water for cooling, leaks far more than any other U.S. plant, in part because Fitzpatrick operators failed to repair the aging equipment, according to the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The rate of unplanned power reductions at the plant has fallen off the chart established by the NRC to monitor that indicator of plant performance.
Fix the chart. I see.
Fix the chart. I see. Dateline New York, something could be missing from next year's electric bill, a fee that electric customers have been paying for 31 years to fund a federal nuclear waste site that doesn't exist. The Energy Department stopped charging the fee by court order on Friday. The amount is only a small percentage of most bills, but it adds up to $750 million a year. The fund now holds $37
billion. I got that on me.
The money was collected to build a long-term disposal site for the highly radioactive nuclear waste generated by the nation's nuclear power plants that is, by law, the federal government's responsibility. I wonder how we got that.
Power plants don't want it.
No, they don't. Clearly, the site was supposed to have opened in 1998. There's no such site, nor even any tangible plans for one. The Energy Department says it plans to have a site designed by 2042 and built by 2048, using the money in the fund, so they're not going to pay it, refund it. The fee is a penny for every 10 kilowatt hours of electricity. It's long bothered state regulators. We never objected to paying the fee when there was a program, said Michigan Utility Commissioner Greg White. But people shouldn't be paying for something that doesn't exist. Oh, that's just sitting there, isn't it?
I'm not touching it.
Okay, clean, cheap, we're too safe to touch. Our friend the Atom. We shouldn't be paying for something that doesn't exist. No, we do it every day. Ladies and gentlemen, you've probably noticed that the controversy swirling around Los Angeles pro basketball Clipper owner Donald Sterling continued to swirl this week. He gave an interview to Anderson Cooper on CNN. His at least former pimp, or a man who claims to be his former pimp, who goes by the name of, I can't even remember the guy's name. He gave an interview on CNN to Don Lemon, and Sterling's wife, Shelley, gave an interview to Barbara Walters. Well, something this tacky, you know, yeah, okay, maybe it belongs on CNN or ABC. I think there's a tackier place for it to live.
Today, on an all-new Dr. Bill, he wants her to go.
Why don't you just marry Magic Johnson?
She wants to go, but maybe not.
I wouldn't miss him, but if you ever sat in courtside seats, they bring you vodka.
And he wants his money.
I didn't introduce him to girls, you know, for my health.
Right now, on a very special Dr. Bill.
5, 4, 3.
Right before you hit Dr. Bill, lick your lips, Dr. Bill.
Dr. Bill! Dr. Bill!
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. As we say every day under the threat of legal consequences, I'm not a medical doctor. And my real name's not Bill. You know, marriage isn't easy. Add in a lot of money, and the world of professional sports with its access to drugs and sex, and any marriage is under severe challenge. Well, our folks today are in that situation only worse, because he's on tape all over the place saying stuff that's even wackier than some of the things I say. Here's Don and Shelley. Don, welcome. You seem to have a lot of friends with tape recorders.
Listen, when you get to be at my level,
People have all sorts of tchotchkes lying around. Is it my fault that people think I'm an interesting guy and want help in remembering what I've said? We all can use help. I'm sorry. I'm so very sorry. But you know, plenty of people record Magic Johnson, too. Nobody asks him about that.
I mean, well, you said plenty of things about Mr. Johnson, but we'll get to that. Shirley, I can't figure out whether you want out of this relationship or not. What's wrong with me? That's my way of asking what's wrong with you.
Well, nothing's wrong with me. I think my husband may have... What's the word again?
Well, they don't call me Dr. Dementia for nothing.
Dementia, that's it. He forgets things. He forgot he liked black people.
Magic Johnson forgets things. He forgets all those women he slept with. Ask him. He's great, don't get me wrong, but he should go sit in a corner with a big schmata on his thing. I'm sorry. Am I not allowed one mistake in each of my answers?
Will you forget Magic Johnson? Well, this is about us. I don't want to lose what we have.
Shirley, at this point, exactly what do you have? Do you have a marriage? Do you have a relationship? Do you have a schnauzer?
We have this team. We own it. And now, for once in our lives, he hasn't succeeded in turning it into a big stinking joke. And now I'm supposed to lose it just at the moment when there are real celebrities coming to our games?
Oh, please. Billy Crystal has been coming all along. He sat there for years and watched us lose like whipped dogs, and he enjoyed himself.
I believe I said real celebrities.
Now, I think maybe this question might have to be left up to the experts at TMZ, but... They're syndicated by another company. So instead, let's go to the Polycom. We got on the phone a former rapper by the name of Lamborghini-fied. Do I call you by your full name?
You call me Lamb, Dr. Bill.
All right, Lamb. You've had a very unusual journey in your life.
That's right, Dr. Bill. I gave up a very promising career as a rapper. As a matter of fact, I was signed to the makeshift morgue label, which in 2001 was the hottest place you could be. And I decided to go back to my first love, which was connecting the most desirable women on the planet with the richest men.
On the planet?
Same planet, that's right.
All right, if you don't mind my asking, what might be a painful question, because if we can't get to the pain, we're going to lose our slot to Dr. Oz. Exactly what motivated you to make what most of us might think of as a backwards move on your life map?
Simple as this. I wasn't going to be the opening act for Bootyface. No way, no how.
All right. Lamb, you...
Have you ever heard Bootyface?
Well...
You can rap better than him, Dr. Bill.
Straight up. Billy Crystal can rap better than him. He told me...
Lamb, exactly how do you figure in the story of this troubled marriage?
Oh, I'll tell you how, Dr. Bill. Oh. He's the guy who got all the girls for him.
Not all the girls, honey. I would never be so insensitive as to limit my interests to any one man's portfolio.
Yo, here's what that means. Most of my women drew the line at sleeping with him. Even so, he owes me for the two Filipino girls, the light-skinned babe from Namibia, the Peruvian lady.
Oh, the Peruvian lady took a couple of things from the house, and I never complained.
Because those were my things, Dr. Bill.
And she was black as night, for God's sake. How does a Peruvian lady get to be darker than Manute friggin' Bowl?
Well, let me ask all of you a question. Mm-hmm. How can I help you? Do you want to continue the marriage? To end the marriage?
Do you want to pay the nice pimp?
I was getting to that. Don, can you take responsibility for your situation?
Let me tell you something, Dr. Bill. Mm-hmm. You know what happens when I'm in the arena?
And which you're not supposed to be anymore.
Oh, screw that. And I walk by Chris Paul, one of my players, and he doesn't even look at me. Forget about saying hello or thank you for the huge checks. Or
the introduction to Lamborghini 5.
This little pitcher who dresses up as his own twin looks down on me. I love him. I love all my players.
Do you love your wife?
Can I trade her to Cleveland?
All right, I can see that what you folks need can't be provided on a television program, even my television program. Do you want help?
Yes.
Sure do.
Yeah.
All right. Would you do this for me? Stick around. We'll get cars for each of you. And will you join me on my 3-hour satellite radio show? And we'll have more time to work this out.
I got shit to do, man. I can't leave these women alone that long.
Don?
Might as well. I can't go to the game. Season's over.
Shirley?
Can the makeup person from here come with me?
It's radio.
There are people there.
All right, we'll try to make this work. And on tomorrow's show, you'll meet the reality show star who fell in love with her own stalker. It's a heartwarming story. Until then, remember, if you don't put yourself on a pedestal, nobody else will. Bye-bye.
Dr. Bill is a Dr. Bill production.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Southeast Missouri State University Sports Information Director Jeff Hausa this week issued an apology for a tweet that went out Friday afternoon that was supposed to link to track and field results. Instead, it led viewers to a risque photo of two women in a bathroom. Close. This close. How's it? Said the university is investigating the tweet. The tweet wound up in the website Deadspin. It was issued from at Go Southeast, the official Twitter profile of Southeast Missouri State Red Hawks athletics. University officials said Friday night they were aware of the issue. Director of Athletics Mark Allnut issued a formal statement saying the university is apologetic over the incident and is in the process of conducting an investigation of how it occurred. Is apologetic. That's about the most hands-off way of saying, I'm sorry. The photo shows two young women, since you asked, the photo shows two young women in a bathroom, one in her underwear and a tank top, and the other in a denim vest with a white blouse underneath and a pair of black shorts down around her knees. The women's faces were blurred out. A text message, email, and phone call to Hauser to find out whether the young women were students at the university and whether the tweet had been taken down were not immediately returned. We're sorry that went out on the university Twitter account. We're looking into it, Hauser said. He did not know where it originated from. Anybody can retweet anything, he said. There's so much sharing on social media. Too much sharing, you think? Dateline Ankara, more in sorrow than in Ankara, but Dateline Ankara, an advisor to Turkish Prime Minister Recep Erdogan, has apologized after a photograph emerged online this week which appeared to show him, the advisor, kicking a protester after Tuesday's coal mine disaster in Turkey. I am deeply sorry for the incident occurred Wednesday in Soma, Yusuf Yurkel said in a written statement. I apologize for not being able to restrain myself, despite all the provocations, insults, and attacks I was subjected to, he added. Mr. Yurkel was photographed Wednesday attacking the protester who was already on the ground after being restrained by the police. They need is a pepper spray cop is what they need. Advertising giant Ogilvy and Mather. Apologized on Thursday for a controversial ad featuring a gory cartoon of Pakistani teenager Malala Yousafzai being shot in the head. Tom, can you help me with that?
Malala.
Thank you. The ad made for Indian mattress retailer Kurion sparked outrage by graphically picturing the attack on the education activist, the 14, which she was shot in the head by the Taliban. The ad shows the young girl facing down the gun, being shot, and tumbling through the air while injured. After landing on the sponsor's mattress, she's able to bounce back, the theme of the ad, to be honored for her work. We deeply regret this incident and want to apologize to Malala and her family, said Rachel Ufer, a senior partner and spokeswoman for Ogilvy. We're investigating how our standards were compromised in this case, and we'll take whatever corrective action is necessary. Ufer said the ad was created in the company's India office. Well, that explains everything. Ogilvy's New York headquarters plan to review its oversight process to ensure that our standards are never compromised again, she added. And she pointed out the ad had not yet run in any paid media. But there's so much that's shared these days. Photo printing website Shutterfly is apologizing after sending a mass email to users congratulating them on their new arrivals. Many people who got the message aren't moms. The misstep sparked a social media storm as slighted users blasted Shutterfly for being insensitive. The company apologized in a statement and individually to hundreds of people on Twitter. This morning, an email was sent unintentionally to some customers. We deeply apologize for any offense this may have caused, Shutterfly said. So much is shared, you know? How do they know? How would they have known who was expecting or pregnant? Anyway, you think? Print your own photos. Keep them off the internet. The English energy giant E.ON, get it? Energy? E.ON, E.ON, has been ordered to pay almost $20 million to its customers after an investigation into mis-selling found, quote, extensive poor practices. The largest ever penalty levied by the British energy regulator, more than 330,000 customers who receive the warm home discount plan, which is targeted at older people and those on low incomes, are automatically going to get a payment of about $50. E.ON said the payments would be made within a matter of weeks. Yeah. Delay your payment to them with that long and see what happens. The final bill could be up to $30 million. The energy company is expected to pay compensation to about 500,000 customers who were mis-sold energy. The penalty reflects E.ON's extensive poor sales practices, said the regulator. It found no evidence that the senior managers had deliberately missold energy to consumers, but they had failed to ensure sales staff were properly trained and followed the rules. As a result, customers were given incorrect information on the doorstep or over the phone and were not made aware of key terms of the contract before it was signed. That's right. In Britain, they still go door-to-door selling energy. How quaint. Am I the last one to be doing apologies? No. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin. That's right. Ich bin ein Radio Berliner. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived, whenever you want it. HarryShearer.com and KCSN.org. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast. Free podcast. Who does free? At iTunes, WWNO.org, SoundCloud, and Sideshow Network, among others. And it'd be just like Chris Paul saying hello to Donald Sterling. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All right. Come on, CP through. Say hello to the nice man. Would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, at home, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks ever so much to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program and the playlist of the music heard here on, you know where to find them, HarryShearer.com. That's where you'll find Cars I Talk t-shirts. If you're in Chicago, hello Chicago, or Nashville this week, you might want to go check out free concerts by Judith Owen. Check judithowen.net for information. With the legendary bass player, he's pretty good, Leland Sklar, along for the ride. Coming soon to your town. Ladies and gentlemen, the show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.